You're listening to Spiritual Living for the 21st Century, the podcast from Unity San Francisco that explores modern spiritual teachings and provides insight into how to apply them in your life. This is Reverend Ken Daigle. Today's talk was recorded live at Unity San Francisco. Enjoy. What I'm going to do today is have conversations with several of our community members about what the reason that they give and what they receive from giving. Because a lot of times in our lives, in especially church world, spiritual world, it becomes all about the money. And people are constantly asking for you to give, to tithe, to donate, to give your time, give your talent, give your treasure. And it feels like an onslaught for all of us, right? Because there's so many causes that are worthy and so many things we do want to support. But how do we discern and how do we get into the flow without being overwhelmed by the water? How do we get into the flow of life and stay there to receive benefits? One of the things I write about and talk about in the book is that in order to actually be abundant, you have to learn how to receive. You have to learn how to be able to take in the good and to own it and to keep it. And that takes a level of consciousness that is like a muscle that we can develop, that we do develop with time. But it also takes conscious and specific practice. So I invite us to open ourselves in our questions to this conversation. Hopefully, I'll be able to channel your questions, but if something really is on your mind, I invite you to shout it out. I'll repeat it for the people who are online. But we have three members of the community I want to talk to about their practice of giving and receiving. And the first is our very own. You've seen him up here earlier, Tyler Krueger. Welcome to the platform, Tyler Krueger.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tyler. Yeah. How are you?
The opportunity to talk about the deeper stuff that I do and that is under the surface.
Yeah. Well, the first time I met Tyler, we were at our old location on Bush Street. And I walked into the sanctuary one day and Tyler was on top of a ladder stringing lights. You were stringing these little strip lights up on the to make the space was very dark and needed to a little bit of bling to make it more festive.
A special event was coming
and they stayed, I think, for a long time after the special event.
And I put it behind the stage, the stage would light up.
The stage, all the glitter. And so not only does he do that, he's wearing a prayer chaplain stole. So you'll see that Tyler's also a prayer chaplain. You've been in the music program here, sing with the music program. You've been a platform assistant for years. What else have I used to work in the office?
I used to work at Unity for you. Uh-huh. And I was on the building search committee. That was another fun adventure. Playing the game of physical world, but using spiritual tools.
Yeah.
I was an advisor to the board for different years. I used to work for you for Absolute Abundance, for your little business. Different ways.
Little.
To use. I shouldn't say it that way.
I'm teasing you.
But different ways, opportunities that when I got here, I was looking for ways to use the spiritual tools and combine it with physical world things. And there was a ton of opportunities.
Yeah.
Well, how to choose love, right? how to choose the good.
So my question is, why do you do that?
I know. I was asking myself the same question.
I mean, that's a lot. Do you hear? I mean, all the things we just listed.
Yeah.
Why?
Okay. I want to say, I was asking myself this week because you told me to, and I was thinking, okay, why? Part of it is I'm an Aquarian, so my point of view can be what I design it to be. And I tried on different points of view, and I rejected them in life. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up with new thought that was this divinity is me, and that my thoughts are creating. So I began to curate what I think about. I have certain topics that are my favorites. If I'm irritated, I might go to these topics. One of them is like I have a tree of many Tylers, and the different Tylers, different lifetimes, are all about doing the good, I think. So I might contemplate, it's not just me, there's others. Or Another one of my favorite topics is that social good. Even what we see in the world, I still believe in this vision that I spend my time on. Mm-hmm. I spend my time, and I ask myself when I'm doing things, what am I thinking about? That's a metaphysical tool right there. What am I thinking about? And then I say, is this worth my time? Mm-hmm. And I had to wake up over the years and say, this is not worth my, but this other one is worth my, I'm going to spend time in the garden of my mind. The garden of my mind. So it's taken me years to get here. But now I'm on this surfboard and I can see the good. And I keep demanding and expecting to see the good. I've turned into this monster for love and good. And I will not stop.
Oh, fabulous. So that's the why. Because doing the work makes things happen in the world. You're creating in the world by doing the work.
I'm doing ripples. My ripples are my thing, and I will ripple, and I will ripple, and I will repeat. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on this mission.
Right. And so that's why.
Yeah.
What is it that you get by doing it?
Well, the reason I started doing it was because of my own mental health and my chaos in my mind as a child and as a youth. And so not only was I studying meditation to calm myself down, but then I wanted to give love to others because it helps me as well. It helps me because I'm at certain moments when I do my Jedi trick well, I pause and I say, no matter what the stress, I say, is love blossoming here? I expect love to blossom. So that's my Jedi, is I'm expecting it. So by me doing that, and then I get to tell myself in the moments where it works, I tell myself, look at what just happened. I tell myself, pause. Love just happened. And I celebrate. I celebrate that glimmer. And so what do I get that glimmer. I get to watch people shift or grow or believe in themselves or do their next step. Mm-hmm. Those glimmers mean the world to me.
So those glimmers, is that an experience of love?
Yeah.
Because you were saying, is love growing in this moment? Right. Is the glimmer you're feeling the love?
Yes. Whatever they're awakening, I'm at least a part of it.
Yes.
I'm a percent. I'm not the whole thing, of course. But I was there. And I get to catch the moments if I can catch the moments. Because I'm busy too.
Yeah.
But do I catch it? I'm looking for it.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's why I show up here.
Yeah.
Because I love it.
So in all three of the people I'm going to talk to today, I want to talk about this too, because this comes, I think, from something really deep. This desire to do service comes from something really deep, but it also can be taught and learned. And so I know a little bit about your story, but can you share to us, you know, the faith of your origin? Mm. And did this start with your family? This penchant you have for giving of your time and your talent, right? Is that come from your upbringing?
It does. Right. I remember there was something about do good, do no harm. So there was that. And then there was a little bit of Christianity. But then I was like 18, 19. I went hyper Jesus. My family was like, what is he doing? And I moved to Oklahoma to pursue missionary work. And in the Christian thing, there was this do good. So I, those were different seeds along the way that I developed into what I am now. I mean, those were just seeds, but I had to do something with those seeds.
Right. And what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing, though, is that all those seeds led you to how your discernment of how this Tyler at this age, at this point in the world, is choosing to interact with the world.
Right. I was totally influenced because I like my point of view. I study my point of view. Cultivate. It is the most important thing because I am happier now, calmer now, freer now, less moments of being upset.
Right. So
it's better.
Receiving.
Yeah.
Giving allows you to receive calm, right?
Yes, because I know it first. First, I forgive myself. And then when I run into my neighbor, I'm like, hey, it's all right. First, I realized that I have anxiety and stress, and somebody else, and it's okay. But first me, and then give it, and then give and receive it, give and receive it. And then I became an engine of it. Which I think also individually, but so is Unity San Francisco, an engine of giving and receiving of this love. We are a vortex that we keep feeding into, and we know that as we give, we receive, ripple, 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 keep doing, keep doing.
Yeah. I remember one of these things that when Tyler did work for us here, there were two things I said to you, if I can share. It's like, you are bigger than this job.
I remember.
Right. I remember saying that very specifically to you. And what I've been able to watch is because he did that job so fully, the job he was doing for us, that he has grown into this new job and this new role and this new capacity in your career.
Yeah.
And it's, I always saw it in you because you don't do anything halfway. You do everything fully. If you're committed, you're in it.
Yes.
And that is an honor to witness and a gift to all of us in the community.
Yes.
So everyone, Tyler Krueger.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Love and service.
And now another member of our community, Sean Kelly. My microphone, excuse me. Put this in here. And you're going to have this one. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Conversations with Ken.
Reaching millions. Support your local sponsors.
That's it. How are you?
They keep this podcast alive. I'm good. I'm good. We do actually podcast this, so it is going to go out to that stream. So appreciate it, Sean. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Yes.
But my mother's side of the family are from Utah. They came with Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, my great-grandparents, and settled Utah. So yeah, I have that whole Mormon influence going through there.
So you know where I'm heading.
I know where you're heading.
So, I mean, Mormonism, for those of you who don't know, have a very, very, I would say, strong, and I might even use the word rigid, code for giving, tithing. Specifically in the Mormon faith is very much taught from foundational teaching, right?
Exactly. When they first settled in Utah, it was rough. You know, they just showed up with wagons. There was nothing there. So tithing was not money. It was your time. It was what you produced that year. And if you did have some cash, it went to that. So it was very much survival, belonging, and a spiritual intention to keep the machine going. So that's how it was for generations. And then once people started getting paychecks, then it became tithing. And they also fast the first Sunday of every month.
Huh.
And that what you fast, the meals you fast off, are tithed to people with food insecurity, because that was a big thing when they got to Utah. People were hungry. They were poor. They wanted to create something new. So everybody would pitch in to help each other. It was a very community-based program. So, yeah.
I love it when I didn't know something and then my guests on my podcast get to teach me. I didn't know that little detail about of the fasting part of and the giving from the fast. That is just amazing.
Yeah, it started on a Thursday and then they moved it to a Sunday. In the beginning, it was a Thursday, but Sunday just turned out to be easier. But yeah, that's definitely something to do. And when you're young and you're fasting for 24 hours, it's not as community oriented as you would think it would be. It's,
yeah, I can't imagine telling that to my kids. We're not eating today.
Yeah.
That might go over well with my little one, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can imagine there was lots of conversations with that. And did you have siblings?
By the time I was growing up, everybody was out. So okay. I was like the youngest in the family. So yeah, it was, and they didn't follow. I got roped into it because of my mom, you know, because I was the youngest, I was at home. So yeah, I had to stick it out with her.
So my experience of you and over the last couple of years that we've been here together and you joined our community is that you give abundantly. You give not only to us here, we have plants out front that were just put in by his whole crew on Friday. So we have more flowers. We have flowers here. We have flowers outside. This is the weekend of flowers. Because John just is like, well, I have this. Can I give this to you? And it is part of your nature as I experience it. But I also know you give to community organizations. We are not the only recipients of your gifts. And so many different organizations that you are passionate about, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so my question is again, why? So the why? Why do you do that? A little bit closer.
I think because of growing up this way with tithing, with how that take it how you want to with Mormons. You know, the experience I had because I grew up with legacy Mormons, which were the ones who settled Utah. It's kind of a whole different tribe, and it was very communal. It was very much caring about each other. It was making sure, you know, everybody had something. If you had something that you could give to somebody, you receive so much more just from being able to help somebody else. It's like Adam Grant in his book, Give and Take.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I want you to succeed. And in order for me to succeed, I'm going to help you succeed. And then it's just this beautiful win-win. So it's just a natural part of what I do. If I see a place or somebody who, you know, a community, this organization, I have this beautiful community here, all these people who come here, and I want to see everybody thrive. So that's the gift that I get from it. That's what I receive.
Wonderful. In my book, I reference Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, which is truly phenomenal. He did studies, social studies of people who give of their treasure, and that people who give financially to organizations they care about make on average 3 to 5% more than people who don't. Mm-hmm. And it's correlated to directly in his studies to the idea of giving just opens that spigot of generosity in your life. And it's like, because hoarding doesn't work.
Right? Yeah, definitely. And I think taking your classes and studying with you was, and it's not easy. I don't want anybody to think like, oh, Ken told me to turn this magic faucet on and here it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of self-study. It's a lot of peeling layers of yourself back that's preventing you from getting that. But I feel like I have more abundance now in my life than I ever had. And I give credit to you for that, because you really open doors. You don't just open doors. You hold doors open for people to come in and have experiences and to feel this generosity. And I think something else that's really important is when you are tithing or you're volunteering or whatever it is, have it come from your heart. If it comes from your heart, it's instead of making it mechanical, like, oh, I gotta tithe. Oh, today's my turn to, you know, valet park out here. But come from your heart of like, this is a beautiful experience that I get to do. It changes everything for you.
Yeah. And I wanna give you this honorific, because you were a student of the Absolute Abundance course that happened before the book. But you have certainly blown past what I thought was possible. Because in that course, I remember you had another job, and you chose to use the course to create your company, right? And I have watched you blossom. And every step along the way, you have been continuing to give and to holding the principles. So the principles come from your upbringing, but you've applied them and manifested them in different ways, you know?
Yeah, and you're the guidepost for that. You know, like I was saying, it was very interesting for me to work with you and through your manifestation classes and peeling away things that I didn't want to see, you know, for the most part, or open up to it. And it is something that, you know, it changes everything, but it does take work, you know. It takes that work, and it takes you to open your heart up to those things, you know.
Well, I want you to know, and I am sure that everybody here can see it too, you are a beautiful human being, and we are blessed to know you.
Well, thank you.
I love you.
Sean Kelly, everybody. Thank you. And a woman who has been at Unity San Francisco longer than I have, Kate Thornton. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone.
I know this about you, that you did grow up in any religion.
I have none of the experiences that Sean or Tyler had at all. It all started when I began at Unity a long time ago, 30 years ago.
But tell me about your parents. How did they raise you?
You know, I grew up in a time in the 50s, well, late 40s, 50s. There was no such thing as parenting. They weren't particularly engaged with raising me. They thought we had good sense and we'll make good decisions. But, you know, there wasn't this guiding force, except that they were lovely people. And that was a wonderful example. And there was a lot of love in the family. So that was wonderful.
Oh, wonderful.
But in, you know, like with your class, we set goals. None of that stuff. None of achieving. Kind of stuff. That wasn't important. You do what you do.
Well, when I was growing up, we grew up Catholic. So I remember always going to services and events, masses and rituals and all of that. So there was a structure of how you served. And so it's not, you know, by accident that I ended up in this job and this career, because I was an altar boy. There's pictures of me in the white cassock and surplice and ringing the bells on the altar. And I'm still doing that 60 years later, right?
Well, one thing, and perhaps it came somewhere from my parents, I always have felt the importance of helping, you know, that kind of thing, you know, which I see here, you know, greeting and so on. If I get something out of a community, I want to put in to keep it going. And so
I want to talk to you this because I'm really fascinated, because I came from that, like I described, from that background where I watched my parents. We had these envelopes and my parents would fill out the envelopes for their giving. Either it was checks or cash they'd put. And in the Catholic Church, you'd have like a year's worth of Sunday offering envelopes. So you knew if you missed a Sunday, right? And my parents would fill out the envelopes every week and put in their offering when we'd go to Mass. And that's why they knew they were giving what they had pledged to the community. So it was not as a huge step up for me when I found Unity and they started talking about tithing and 10% and giving all of that. And I at first resisted it, but then when I dove into the practice, I really found benefit in it. And my life started growing in ways that really astonished me. But I know, and from our conversations, that you, for the tithes for the first time when you came to Unity, you took, I think it was the 4T class here?
I did, yeah. And prior to tithing, I mean, I was terrified of it. And, you know, I couldn't think of how, you know, there's always the promise of it and what will come to you. And I thought, where in the world? I knew I had a job with maybe a cost of living increase, occasional promotion, but no big things. And yet, we had some speakers. I remember Edwin Gaines being one of them, and a couple of other people. And there's that fascination with what could be possible.
Yeah. So Edwin Gaines was this Southern woman. She's the one that I first heard said, "What happens in vagueness stays in vagueness, honey." And she was wonderful. She would wear these gowns onto stage, and she would stand up and say, "I am a woman of power and wealth, and if I want something, I buy it." Right. And she was the manifest queen.
She was very impressive, and it made a big impression on me. And at some point, this was maybe a couple of years after I heard her talk, but not too much. We were having a prosperity class at Unity, and it was the fall of 1999. And I was wanting to be in the flow of the universe. This tithing thing was really nagging at me. And I thought, not just a new year, but a whole new millennium. This is the perfect time to start. But I was still afraid about the money. So it was about in October, maybe 10, 12 weeks till the end of the year. So I figured out what a full tithe would be. And then I deducted the amount I was currently giving weekly, divided it by the number of weeks, and each week I increased by that amount. And that was a palatable way to get there. And I was getting excited the closer I got. And I remember December 1, I just jumped in and that's it. And I have been tithing ever since. And I swear, I don't think I have ever missed a time. I used to do it by the week. And if I wasn't there 1 week, I'd double up. Now I do it by the month. So it's easy enough. But I just bought into it. And the gifts have been wonderful. Here's another thing. The minute I did it, I stopped being afraid. It just, that washed away. And so I was a happy tither. And some of the things that I have received, you know, like the first principle, one presence, one power, everything is here. And the way I look at it is being in the flow by tithing brings me to situations or opens me up to things that are already available. And I've had a good 3 or 4 substantial financial gains by realizing certain things were available, things that I didn't know, and a big windfall as well.
Well, I'm going to ask you about the big windfall.
Okay.
if you're open to talking about it, I'll leave it to you how you describe it. But I'm fascinated because it came from service. So Kate recently, like she described, just came through a windfall, a financial windfall, but it happened not because of something you conceived. You were serving, right?
Yes, that's true.
You never thought of it that way?
Well, I did. I had an elderly neighbor who, you know, I'd known him for 30 years. My husband knew him. He was the kind of person, a sidewalk neighbor. You know, we'd chat on the street and we weren't in each other's houses or anything. But as he got in his waning years, he couldn't get out to drive. And I started doing his grocery shopping and then eventually bringing him meals and sometimes taking him to doctor appointments. He had some hospitalizations, visiting him and so on. And at some point he said to me, you know, my family's all gone. My friends are all gone. I'm leaving everything to you. Wow, it's right. Wow. It was that kind of thing that I almost couldn't believe it. And I was in shock. And he lived a couple of years beyond that. And I kept thinking, you know, he might forget about this or whatever. Right. He did write out a will and gave it to me. And at any rate, after he passed away, I took the will to a lawyer. And there was a considerable amount of time where it had to be, you know, probate and a few other things. And some relatives came out of the woodwork that lived from Europe. but it all sorted out. And I inherited, basically, it was his house. You know, the contents in it were, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it was the house. And a house in San Francisco, even one that needed all the work that this one needed. You know, it's a something. And it just, the sale of it wasn't quick because of the fact that there was so much work that needed to be done. But it did sell about just before the end of the year.
Yeah. And what I was so impressed with how you handled all of that, I wanted to talk about it, is that it didn't elicit any fear in you. You know, because I have worked with a lot of different people and in myself that the windfalls and money can also bring up fear of money, mishandling it, not being able to, people are going to come out, people are going to, am I going to do it wrong? And I watched you walk through this and you seem so calm through all of this, right?
And I'm particularly more calm because I have figured out the what to do with it. so I'm happy about that. Uh-huh. You know, it was such a big amount. I mean, from my point of view, I do want to share some of it with people, and I have already, and that's important to me. You know, it's not like, I don't know. You have something and you can do some good with it. It's important to do that. So, yeah.
Well, one of the things you said to me was that, you know, I'm comfortable. I don't need it.
That's true. And that's some of the gifts from tithing, house aside, you know, that my income had increased to the point where, you know, I'm living just fine. And this is fabulous, but it isn't really going to change. You know, I mean, yes, it changes things, but I was fine without it. And because it was a little bit complicated with the court thing after he passed away, I remember thinking, if this doesn't work out, that's okay. That's okay.
Talking about surrender. It's yeah. The principle of surrender. We're not in charge of how things unfold. We're not in charge of the timeline of how they unfold. But being present for it all, being present for it all enables us to enjoy it all. And what are the greatest gifts? And thank you for sharing that. I know that's personal stuff. And thank you for being public about it. Because I think you're an incredible example of how to not let it affect you in a negative way or in an overwhelming way. That the practice of money through the years, the practice of tithing of treasure, the practice of receiving and giving is building the muscle.
It is building the muscle. And I am very happy to have built a generous muscle. It makes me happy to do that.
Thanks for listening to Spiritual Living for the 21st Century. I'm Reverend Ken Daigle. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Unity San Francisco and learn more about us at unitysf.com. Spiritual Living for the 21st Century is a production of Unity San Francisco.